just a reminder, my name is Linda Garrison, so I'm going to count to three, and after I say three, you're going to say my name, and then I'll tell you why. So it's going to go like this, one, two, three, Linda. Okay, now we're going to do it all together. You don't have to say my last name. One, two, three,
Linda.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm going to call on people, but you only need to be nervous that I'm going to call on you if you know my name. They all should have gotten that. This is the first I Love Quaker Heights for this year. I expect some things will not go as I have planned. Some things may even seem to go wrong. Don't tell me about them because I'll already know. And wouldn't it be terrifying if you told me something that I didn't know about what went wrong, because then there'd be even more things that had gone wrong. I do leave for Cuba in a couple weeks. I'll be in Miami. Poor, poor, pitiful me. I'll be at the friends meeting there of the folks who've come from Cuba, who worship in Miami. Your connection to Cuba, in case you don't know, and the Cubans will tell me all the time, is through the name of Martin. Zenas Martin was one who began the work in Cuba. And Mike can tell you all about Zenas. There are a couple short little announcements that we want to share with you. We have not yet set our spring work day, but we will let you know, and we hope that it will not be below 32 degrees when we gather together. Chip will be closing camp here in a little bit. We've had some late groups, but it is time to close down. But it's nice that the weather has held for that activity. But we'll need your help to open it back up. Chip's also going to come up and go through some dates and talk to you about what you perhaps are most familiar with, and that is the Young Friends Camp. We will be hosting another family camp this coming year, and it will be the first full weekend in September. We expect the Shornacks to come and help us. If you only vaguely know that name, Nancy Shornack is the daughter of M.R. and Jane Whitehead, and they've done things at camp before, and we anticipate their I don't know exactly what letters are after their names, but I know they do counseling. We have shirts. Lucas, can you stand up and turn around in case no one's seen you today? Okay. Meredith has those shirts, none of which have been worn by Lucas, for sale. And this being 2012, you all can get the 2012 price, which is just $10, and the 2011 price was $13. So let Meredith know if you want one of those, if you want to pay for one of those. Chip is going to come up and give you some dates and talk to you all about Young Friends Camps.
By a show of hands, how many of you came to camp this last year for Young Friends Camps? Raise them high so I can see. How many of you came to camp for just came to camp? All right. I'm just going to talk about the Young Friends dates this morning. If you want to, iaym.org. is the yearly meetings website. The camp dates are up there. If you want to take a look at them when you're doing scheduling stuff for vacations or whatever. I'll just start off at the beginning of the month. June 1st through the 3rd is College Weekender. I know there's another big thing going on here at the church that weekend, but
who cares?
So I know you guys will probably be busy, but... The 3rd through the 6th is Fry Camp, which is 3rd and 4th grade, and Little Fry Camp is the 8th through the 10th. I'll make an announcement here before I forget. The big thing this year with the ages of the camps is the camp that you just completed. So Fox Camp is 3rd and 4th grade. So if you just completed 3rd grade or you just completed 4th grade, you'll go to Fry Camp. All right? So like the same thing with junior high camp. If you just completed 8th grade, you'll still go to junior high camp, not to high school camp. It's not the grade you're entering. It's the grade you just completed. So anyways, back to the dates. Fox Camp, 5th and 6th grade, is the 24th through the 28th. Junior high is the 10th through the 15th. And high school is the 15th through the 20th. So I'm really excited about camp this summer. We got our all of our directors lined up and everything. So we're getting speakers lined up and music lined up and counselors lined up as we speak. So we might be contacting some of you to come and help us out this summer. So thank you.
This morning will require some participation from you. Now, if you answer readily, then I won't have to point at you and ask you to help me. And if I have to point at anyone, Chip already knows I'm going to call on him first. So, 1 week ago, what were we celebrating? Thank you. Do any of you want to tell your resolutions? That's wisdom. Yeah. Has anyone made a resolution and kept it thus far? What was yours? Can you tell us? Oh, yeah. Thanks. How about that? Anybody else have one they want to share? Usually you either have a will or a will not. And one of my resolutions for this year is I will not complain about my job if I get hired as an elephant trainer. That's it. So far, I have kept that resolution. You know, sometimes people make resolutions and sometimes they'll make big changes. They'll determine to make a big change in their life because the doctor, and this has not yet happened to me, the doctor said, if you don't stop doing that, it'll kill you. And they'll change for a while. But I come from a family of smokers, and I had a sister who had a stroke, and it was massive. And she came out, she'd given up smoking for 7 years. And you know what she took up as soon as she could once she got out of the hospital? Because she did not know any better. She took up smoking right away because she was a smoker. I have escaped that temptation. But complaining about being any of my job as an elephant trainer might be a problem. And there's a little pun here because some of the duties might be icky. Okay, there's one verse that I want to read to you today from the King James Version, and. And this is how we're going to, this is the theme of the day of this, what I'm sharing is stance. What is your stance? These are God's words, and he shared them with Moses, and this is in Exodus 32:9. And Exodus 32:9 says, "The Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people." I can't decide who to call on. Don't drop your eyes, Clark. You'll be next. Okay, Chip, come on up. He was going to volunteer anyway. Oh, or Carter? I can't quite see you, Carter. Can you? Thank you. Okay. I like that you all sat in the places in which you have always sat since I have known you and since I've been coming here. So thank you. Don't ever change. There's almost no fear of that. So, all right, Chip, show me what you think a posture would look like. I forget we're on the World Wide Web, so I shouldn't leave the mic. Show me what a stiff-necked posture would look like. Yeah, you, they have to be able to see it on you. Stiff-necked. Okay. One thing that I've always... Quit smiling. Stop smiling. Okay. What do you think God meant when he said they were a stiff-necked people?
Stubborn.
If I were to push him over right now and he were to remain stiff, what would happen? He would fall and he would break. Now, maybe not. Let's
If he were to stand on the edge and I were to push him over, he would fall. One of the things you learn in workplace safety is, and this is something that Clark needs to know, is if you're going to fall, you go limp. And in fact, you're supposed to try and exhale, and you can exhale by making that judo sound. Now, kids don't know judo anymore. They don't even know karate. Did you know that? They just know yoga. So yoga is loose. So you're doing very, very well. Let's see. See, he could fall. He caught himself. You may have a seat, but I will be calling you back up here again. Or Clark. So, or Clark's friend whose name was what? Carter. You'll remind me of that? Thank you. All right. These were a stiff-necked people, and God was addressing Moses about these people because of their reaction when they got the Ten Commandments. And we're going to come back around to that story and end, and curiously we're going to end to some degree with the thought that Jesus never fails. And when I was working through the sermon, and you may not show, but I've worked on it since September, there was a part, I have Meredith because that's, she's doubting me. There was a part where I was going to put, he's still working on me. But these were a stiff-necked people. And as this exchange with Moses and the Hebrew children takes place, it comes around to another part. But if you are a stiff-necked person, not only is your neck stiff, but all of the activity in your body is wherever you are contracting that muscle. So if you're a stiff-necked person and you're being stubborn, and with a child, you know, we don't say this much about adults because, oh, of course, adults don't do that. They don't have temper tantrums. But generally, when people have a stiff neck, it is because they are not getting what they want. Now, we can say talk about this with a two-year-old because we expect it of a two-year-old. But the reason God has to keep working on us is because that our bent to sinning, take away our bent to sinning. God doesn't take away our bent to sinning. We can ask God to, please, God, make it so I don't want to sin anymore. That rarely happens. Please, God, give me the strength that when this temptation comes to me, I can turn to you. These stiff-necked people would remain so throughout history. And you know what? We're no different. You might think, oh, those were Jews, and we're not Jews. We're not the Hebrew people. So we're nothing like them. We're exactly like them. The reason that we're supposed to always be looking towards Israel is, you know what? They're supposed to display God for us. But the trouble is they look a lot like us. And they're still a stiff-necked people, and we're stiff-necked as well. You probably know this, you know, if you have a pet peeve about something, and you could, even though you might not share a New Year's resolution, you could probably come up with a pet peeve. Those might be the things which, in reaction, you're stiff-necked. You either get somebody to stop it, or you turn away. You turn away from it completely because you just don't want to see it. People know my pet peeves because they end up being in the camp rules, but my pet peeves are really for your safety. So if you ever doubt why there's a rule, it's because I care about you. Throughout this, when we come to the end of this, you'll see that while we are supposed to be like God, while God always has to work on us, it's because we are so unlike him through most of our journey. And he wants us to be more like him because it's easier for all of us to be in communion if we don't have anything between us. And if we're not always saying, I want my way. When we will understand that God's not going to take away our bent to sinning, but he's going to provide us with a way to live in spite of it, then we can become more like God. There's a verse in Hebrews. It's Hebrews 12:12. And when I was thinking about posture and stance, this is something I thought about because this is something that that I consider when I have to be in front of people. And Hebrews 12:12 at the beginning says, "Lift up the hands which hang down." And if you think about it, how often do you really see somebody like this? You very rarely see people like that. Maybe that's why my sister took up smoking again, because she wanted something to do with her hands. When I have to sing in front of people, if I'm not in a group where we get to stand like this, I think, what am I going to do with my hands? I feel like my hands must be giant monster Edward Scissorhand hands, but with no skill. What are you going to do with your hands? You're supposed to do things with your hands. Everything you find to do with your hands also is supposed to bring glory to God. But when people are discouraged, sometimes they just stop. And sometimes they just stop fiddling. Now, there is a time for us to stop and be still. I remember I went somewhere and people started talking about body language. And it was at a women's retreat. It was at a God's Girls Getaway. So perhaps Margaret was there. And someone had learned all this stuff about body language. And I thought, pish posh. Because apparently if you sat the way I always sat, which is exactly how Alicia and Chip are sitting right now, you're closed off. Now, I'm usually just trying to find something to do with my hands or keep them warm. But you're closed off. And that, really, this is as close to the fetal position as we all usually assume. Nothing's going to get in there. But your hands will stay warm. But you tend to be closed off. So after that, I at least in periods of open worship, because you're supposed to be disciplined in open worship. Open worship is kind of like you're bent to sinning. It doesn't come easily and naturally does. So I often have to unfold my arms and, you know, not pick up the pen and fiddle and unfold my other arm. And I look at my legs, and my legs are either crossed or my ankles are crossed, or, in church I've got them tucked up, under where the hymn book goes. I have to unfold my legs and let all that muscle tension even go. I have to decide to let it go because it does matter. It matters. Your body and your soul are connected. Sometimes the Israelite people had trouble with this. So God kept calling them back into a whole body worship experience, a whole human worship experience. So it is our job as believers then to acknowledge that there are folks who are stiff-necked, and often it is us. And to also acknowledge there are folks whose hands hang down. And while we might not think that they really have any reason for their hands to hang down, if they believe there's a reason for their hands to hang down, their hands are going to hang down and they're going to be discouraged. It's not up for you to change their mind, but to perhaps enter into that time with them and find out what their point of hopelessness is. And the answer is not always, Jesus will help you. It's okay for you to think that, but if you're with somebody whose hands have hung down for a while, I promise you that though those words are true, those words are not welcome. However, your presence, your quiet presence, perhaps, we have to shut our mouths and not give our opinions sometimes. Your quiet presence with those people whose hands hang down may mean that in the end you will have the opportunity to witness when they are able to lift up their hands again. Lift up their hands and fiddle, or lift up their hands, even fiddling is going to be a positive thing, or lift up their hands to God. There's a couple verses in Luke, and I'm going to ask somebody else to read this. So, Charlene has her Bible. Good thing. And it can come from any version, although if you want the King James, we found a couple. Start with Luke 2:52. And this is from a familiar Bible story, especially right about now. So Luke 2:52, Charlene. Okay. So these words are recorded for us in the gospel for some sort of reason, not just for baby dedication Sunday. It used to be on every church that a cradle roll, and would show Jesus with the lambs, and there'd be there'd be ribbon hanging down, and there'd be a little lamb, and then children's names would be written on it. And you can kind of tell where church is. If they're stuck in the 60s, in the 70s, so there might still be one, and the names on it might still be the name. So they'd be people who are my age. If you go to Spring Grove Friends Church outside of Osawatomie, Kansas, it could be that my name is still up there. But it is important that we know this. Jesus grew in favor with God and man. And can you read that again? Because when I committed it to memory, it didn't stay there. And stature and favor with God and man. So he grew in wisdom. So he grew in his ability to consider. He grew in stature. He grew bigger. He grew in favor with God. And you can do that as well. And he grew in favor with man. And then who will read Luke 10:27? If you volunteer, then I don't have to call on you. Luke 10:27. Thank you, Mike. The same words that had been spoken of Jesus, Jesus to some degree then speaks to all the people about what we are supposed to do. Our heart, our soul, our mind, and our strength, our physical person, are all involved. And also then, we're supposed to love our neighbor in just the same way. In the same way that we love God, we're supposed to love our neighbor. And later on, you'll hear the story. And the question is, well, just who is my neighbor? As though we want to limit. Okay, who am I supposed to love like that? Just who is my neighbor? And then you find out, oh my, it's everyone. Along with the way we stand, there's this posture of possibility. Now, I learned this at the nursing home as well. As well as, you know, when you're going to fall, you go limp. But there's also this posture of possibility. And much to my dismay, you know, I work, as I've told you before, I work 3 hours a week in the nursing home. Nobody works. I do not believe that anyone works fewer hours for care initiatives than Linda Garrison. I do believe there are people who don't work as hard. But nobody works fewer hours. But I'm still required to do every single bit of training. And we have a locked unit, an Alzheimer's unit, at Eldora Nursing and Rehab. So every person who works there has to go through the Alzheimer's training. And you don't go through it till the end of the year. So you get all of this Alzheimer's training at one time. And it can be a lot, and it can make your hands hang limp. It can make your hands hang limp. But there is a posture that is associated with being able to communicate with people with Alzheimer's. As you may know, if you were here a few years ago, you know, because I told you. I was thinking today that you probably don't remember what I preached about last year, much less in the years gone by. But there's an arc with Alzheimer's. And as those afflicted with Alzheimer's progress through this, they do turn back to the time of their youth until they're left as an infant, being completely unable to care for themselves. So as you go from here, you know, right around here, people start to lose words. And there's all sorts of terms associated with this. And when you hear them, it's stunning. And you have to know that ability to communicate, they're aware of it early on. They're aware that these things are leaving. So I know a woman whose name I cannot tell you because of HIPAA, who is in this beginning stage. So, she might be a little further down. She doesn't know the name of her children or her grandchildren or the people who live in the room next door to her. And when you ask her what she wants to drink, she knows she wants milk. And she prefers chocolate, but she calls it dark milk. So she's hanging on to some thoughts, but not all of them. Now, she's got a long way to go.
And the confusion will be there because she won't be able to find a word, but she'll know that a word existed. For early, you know, as she moves through here for a while, that word will still, she'll know that she should know, but she's not going to be able to find it. And that's where the confusion and frustration goes. Don't expect your loved ones with Alzheimer's to remember your name. It's gone. It doesn't mean you're gone or that you lack in value. Around your church, you may have plaques. I don't see one up here or on the side of the piano. Now, a plaque on a wall, wonderful. Except sometimes a plaque on a wall can stop you as well. You can't do anything with this. If there's a plaque on this, it's going to be here forever. You can't do anything. And that's what happens with Alzheimer's. There's plaque. Plaque on this, maybe still not so good. But plaque in your body, not good, not good. On your teeth, not good. In your heart, not good. In your brain. It stops. It stops it. So at some point in time, those names are gone. Curiously, studies have shown that folks with Alzheimer's can still get irony and sarcasm. They might not get the word, but when you say, oh, that's really funny, they'll know why you're not laughing, because they'll know it's not really funny. So some part of their brain, there's still the ability to communicate. But this was stunning to me, to the point that right now I feel like I'm close to tears, but I'm determined not to cry. There is one posture that you can use with Alzheimer's. Now, with folks with Alzheimer's, you don't come up behind them. You know, you don't try and sneak up on them. You don't try and set them straight. No, you know that this is 2012. You know that your husband died 20 years ago. Nobody's coming to see you. They're all dead. You don't do that. Maybe later. We'll go back and look down the hall later. But there is one posture that you can use. And when they showed this posture on the screen, I thought, I've seen that on the wall of the church before too. And this is the one thing that Alzheimer's people do not find threatening, even if all of their words are gone. And it's this one. It's this one. When you stand like this, somehow, even the people with Alzheimer's know you are your most vulnerable. You cannot stand like this and be stiff-necked. The parts at which you can be injured are all right there. You can be hurt as well. But when I see this, when I saw that, I thought, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That is a posture of possibility, even for folks who live in a mystery that we cannot yet understand. This is a posture of possibility. Now, there's a possibility that if you stand like this, you're going to get hurt. Because if you stand like this and you stay like this, you are not defending yourself. If you stand like this and you stay like this, you can't hardly have a stiff neck. If you stand like this and you stay like this, you have to determine to keep your arms up and keep your body open and not be forever protecting yourself if you stand like that. I'd like to close with Exodus 34:6, and I'd like someone to stand and read Exodus 34:6. And if you're standing at the front, then you'll have to turn around because I want everybody to hear it. Exodus is in the front of the Bible. Go ahead, Daniel. Oh, Anne's got it. Anne, B. Okay, Daniel. Exodus 34:6. Yep. Thank you. So this God who acknowledged to Moses, oh my, you are part of a stubborn crowd. This God, as we come around, is compassionate,
slow to anger, and full of mercy. Those are some of the first words that describe the character of God in the Old Testament. Some of the first words that have been reserved for us wherein God describes himself. What he wants us to know is this is what you are like, you stiff-necked people. And God's reaction to a stiff-necked people is to be gracious, compassionate, and slow to anger. When your neck is stiff, you are not slow to anger because you're already in anger mode. I find a lot of hope. I'm delighted to be able to serve you at camp, and not everything is youth camp. We had a group on site this weekend from Memorial Lutheran in Nevada, and it's their council, so sort of like their ministry and council. We have a lot of groups like that. We have a lot of families that come up. Those who dreamed up Tall Oaks never could have imagined the ministry that it has to families. And that is one of the ways in which I am blessed to be able to see it, and to see not the first night, but the second day when folks start to loosen up and be together, and be honest. It's something to behold and to know just how people are. We're stiff-necked. I'm stiff-necked. I'm quite prone to discouragement. And yet, God pulls me into this place every time. And at whatever point, when I leave this world and pass into the next, I think it's going to be moving toward a posture more like this than this or this, even though I've always been this way or this way. Because he's still working on me, I can pull around and come back to that. It's my delight to share with you. Alicia's going to come up and set up to share a song with you. And while she sings, we're going to gather the offering for Camp Quaker Heights. So we have another set of offering plates up here. And so if the ushers will come forward, we'll go ahead and start. And I'll let Alicia do the things that she needs to do to get ready. Following Alicia's special, then Manny's going to close out this time. You can come on. Oh, yeah. You can come on up here.
Died for me, the power of your life is in me. Father, let your light shine down on me. Father, let your light shine down on me. No matter what the day or night may bring, Father, let your light shine down on me. Jesus, you became what was my deepest shame, that at your very name my calloused heart would change. How could you, perfect one, love me when I have done nothing that's worthy of my freedom? You have won a wonderful love. You died for me, the power of life is in me. Father, let your light shine down on me. Father, let your light shine down on me. No matter what the day or night may bring, Father, let your light shine down on me. Open up the heavens, pour down your Spirit on me, God. Oh, Jesus, wherever you lead, I'll sing harmony. Hold me, God. Father, let your light shine down on me. Father, let your light shine down on me. No matter what the day or night may bring, Father, let your light shine down on me. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me.
Father, thank you for your word today. What a powerful word. Just to not be stiff-necked. And even the words of the song that Alicia just sang, just speak to that, Lord. When your light shines on us, may we shine that light to other people. And we can't do that if we're defensive and stiff-necked. So help us to open ourselves up, first of all, to you. And then as a result of that, to other people. To just share your love, and your compassion, and your mercy. Lord, I pray that you bless our time together as we leave here and head into the fellowship hall for food and fellowship. Just pray that our conversations around the table can be glorifying to you and to one another. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.